Campus FM je prezenta
Platea. Program li l-għanam esponenti ewlenin fit-teatru.
Li jitkellmu Malino Farrugia.
Platea, selmilkom l-lum platea, bil-pjaċir kbir, għedin nil-għaw maħna l-Poli March. Ovvjament, għedin introduċi din l-ewel parti tal-program bil-Malti, u bat ovvjament Poli li għamlet zmin twil dejjem ma jiexet l-Ingilterra, għal-kem hija Maltija, u bat ovvjament nkunna elbu l-lingwa għal-Malti, għal-Inglis. Poli, March hija daw l-aħħar snin raġa ġiet lura, Malta fejn tatna l-opportunità naraw it-talent kbir li għandha u ħalkolna ċans li nitkellmu magħhom nisimgħu ħafna interpretazzjonijiet differenti li tatna. Poli, welcome to Platea.
Thank you.
And let's start from the very beginning of your career. First of all, you are basically a Maltese, aren't you?
I am.
Oh, yes.
I am. Okay. I'm very happy now to say that it's taken me a long time. I finally got an ID card. Yes.
Yeah, you managed.
I managed to prove I'm Maltese, half Maltese.
My mother
was English. My father was Maltese. My surname was Asapardi Preziosi.
I see. And where did you leave to England? Lived in England all your life.
Pretty
you?
Well. Mummy took me to England when I was about six, coming up, seven.
I see.
To go to school there.
And then you started?
Never came back. I came back when I was about 14 for a short time. Then I came back again in my early 20s with my husband, and just because I have two sisters, and my sister Elizabeth married John, who is Maltese, and stayed on here.
I see.
She stayed on here. No, Liz and Anne, I was an afterthought, Liz and Anne. well ahead of me. But Liz stayed on, married the lovely John, stayed here, and I used to come out, and so did Anne and her husband and family. They used to come on holiday. So we had those casual connections, just holiday, but it never felt like home.
I see. Oh, interesting.
It never felt like home. Oh. Oddly enough, things have changed now, but those were just holidays.
You feel at home now, don't you?
Completely.
You managed to integrate and thank God you're here. I'm so glad that you are here, because we are seeing some marvelous work coming from you.
Oh, thank you.
But let's start again about theatre. How come that you started doing theatre? When did you start doing theatre?
When did I start? Well, my father, John, was very involved with Rediffusion here. He wrote plays. He was an actor.
That's a Asapardi Preziosi.
He wrote a passion play.
I remember the name, definitely.
I think a farce. I don't know. But it's somewhere in the genes. Okay?
Yes,
my mother was an opera singer. Somewhere in the genes.
Uh-huh.
But don't let me sing. They don't let me sing. They've heard me sing. I think the talent stopped with Liz. Liz is the singer. So it's there in the genes. Mm-hmm. My two older sisters were all too often too fond of telling me that I was a horrid little show-off when I was little. And would prance around in front of a mirror. Saying, aren't I pretty? Aren't I pretty?
Okay.
They might just have been jealous because I used to be the one that got the buns. So I go to England and it's always there, this desire to perform in various ways. Eventually I get to drama school.
Mm-hmm.
I went to Guildhall.
Mm-hmm.
I got married and my husband was an actor as well.
I see.
And so I decided to be fair to him, I decided that it wasn't fair to have both of us working in the theatre, otherwise we'd both of us be living on nothing. So I started working for a wonderful architectural practice and had 10 wonderful years working for a group of architects.
I see.
Eventually, sadly, Dominic and I split up, got divorced, and it was only then that I thought, I can go and do what I was trained to do.
I see.
You know, I kept up a bit of amateur work during my marriage, but mostly it was, I kind of abandoned it completely. So I started very late.
Very late, I see.
I started at 32.
And you went to an academy?
I had already been to drama school.
To the drama school.
Where I met Dominic. And then abandoned it all.
I see.
Sadly. But I just started very late. But, I started at 32. Yeah.
But then you started...
From then on, I haven't really stopped.
Uh-huh. Well, any experiences in the London stage? Tell us, please.
The thing is, it's always important to remember that trying to earn a living as an actor in England...
You went to Guildhall, no?
I went to Guildhall. Yes. School of... Music and drama. But trying to earn a living in England in the theatre is extremely hard. Mm-hmm. Here in Malta, there is the plus of it being not a hobby, because it's infinitely more serious most hobbies, but the majority of people here are not trying to scrape a living off what they earn.
No.
So as an actor, or as any member of any arts discipline in England, I can only speak of England, it's hard.
Sure.
So most actors have worked in cafes, bars, restaurants, bookshops, you name it, we've done it all. So my first job, because you have to have an equity card, you have to have a union card, was Divine. I worked for a communist, he was a communist. A wonderful man in Wolverhampton who had a puppet theatre.
I see.
And I learnt how to manipulate
the puppets
on long strings and throw voices down the strings.
Oh,
I think
that's what
gave me my love of radio, audio work.
Yes.
Audio is my top favourite, really. Mm-hmm. It's a very hot medium. Mm-hmm. Anyway, I worked with the Divine Bernard. We had such a wonderful time touring. And it's the first time I had come out of my kind of middle-class enclosure. And it was quite strange for me to hear these really thick Wolverhampton voices coming out of little black kids. I didn't expect them to be talking like that. You know, it was really
lovely.
They were gorgeous. Yeah. But then I got my card. It's very important. You can't work until you've got your card.
Yeah.
And I have done so much. I've been very lucky. I've worked several times at the Royal Exchange in Manchester.
Mm-hmm.
I did the West End premiere of The Lion, the Witch and the Wardrobe.
Ooh.
And created the part of Mrs. Beaver.
I see.
Which was lovely. And, oddly enough, things going round in circles.
Mm-hmm.
I'm also part of an American company that comes to England a couple of times a year, has got a pool of actors, a sort of repertoire of actors, and they record major radio plays, programs, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And for over a year, I was part of the repertory company, the radio rep, that created all the Narnia Chronicles for American Broadcasting and now for the BBC. And I was in all of them. And it was... we had such a wonderful time. We had David Suchet was Aslan. Paul Scofield was the narrator. We had great visiting stars. You know, we'd always be there. Every month we'd be there. And then these great stars were coming. But David Suchet was a regular as Aslan, obviously.
I see.
I played Lucy in Charlie Brown in Town. Long time. And the young actor who was playing Charlie Brown, Canadian guy, used to lodge with me. I think Lucy took me over, because within a very short time, Jim had turned into Charlie, and I'd find myself saying, "Oh, for heaven's sake, Jim, you burnt the toast." Sorry, Charlie.
You started living the part.
We started living it. Oh, man. I had a wonderful experience playing in a play by Reggie Oliver called Absolution, a two-hander based on sounds not a happy thing, but based on the story of Myra Hindley, the Moors murderer, and her relationship with Lord Longford.
Mm-hmm.
And it was an extraordinary piece of work, and I have never, perhaps people aren't familiar with Myra Hindley anymore, but I have never played a woman who has been accused of killing several children. torturing them,
yes,
killing them.
That was terrible
and
story.
To get into her mind and to conduct these dialogues with this great brain that is Lord Longford was an extraordinary experience.
From here, let's move to some interpretation now.
Yes.
Let's hear Polly Marsh interpreting her first extract from Winter's Tale.
I played in Winter's Tale about 10 years ago. In fact, I played Paulina. But I thought rather than doing a bit of Paulina, I'd like to do Hermione's trial scene speech. As I'm never going to get the chance to play Hermione, being a little too old for that. But you can get away with it on radio. Here we are. This is Hermione having been accused by her husband of having a child by his best friend, Polixenes. Since what I am about to say must be but that which contradicts my accusation, and the testimony on my part no other but what comes from myself, it shall scarce boot me to say not guilty. Mine integrity being counted falsehood shall, as I express it, be so received. But thus, if powers divine behold our human actions as they do, I doubt not, then but innocence shall make false accusation blush and tyranny tremble at patience. You, my lord, best know, who least will seem to do so, my past life hath been as continent, as chaste, as true, as I am now unhappy. For behold me, a fellow of the royal bed, which owe a moiety of the throne, a great king's daughter, the mother to a hopeful prince, here, standing to prate and talk for life and honour, for who please to come and hear. I appeal to your own conscience, sir. Before Polixenes came to your court, how I was in your grace, how merited to be so. Since he came, with what encounter so uncurrent I have strained to appear thus. If one jot be on the bound of honour, or in act or will that way inclining, hardened be the hearts of all that hear me, and my nearest of kin cry fie upon my grave.
That was Polly Marsh interpreting Hermione in Winter's Tale. That was absolutely beautiful, different voice coming from Polly Marsh. What else can you add to the story when the experiences you've had in your younger, many years ago?
Many years ago.
We've been past 25, both of us.
Only just, darling, only just.
Oh, yes.
Only just.
That's what we say. Three times, nearly. Me, well.
I'm not owning up. Okay. I'm not owning up to anything.
So, let's carry on
while I can carry on dyeing my hair.
I don't.
No, very distinguished you looked.
Thank you.
I've only done a couple of musicals. One of them was You're a Good Man, Charlie Brown, which I really loved. I really enjoyed doing Lucy, as I told you, and poor Charles. Charlie Brown, played by Jim, had a very horrid time. I was part of a company at the Salisbury Playhouse, near where I have my home in England, in Wilton, in Wiltshire. I've often worked at the Salisbury Playhouse, and one of the first plays I did there was The Winter's Tale. So it was quite nice.
Oh, I see.
It was quite nice to go in full circle. I played Paulina then, but this time, this year, directed it with the MADC back at San Anton.
Yes, back at San Anton. We had a wonderful time. Thank God for that.
I can't praise that cast enough. They trusted me totally. They were joyful. So The Great Big Radio Show was another musical that I've done based on a 1930s pastiche written by Philip Glassborough, and he's a great expert on the era. We played at the Watermill and then transferred several times. This is a piece of like theatre history. You know, we did the show was a stonking success at the Watermill.
Mm-hmm.
And on the last matinee,
mm-hmm.
now the Watermill, ladies and gentlemen, is a theatre literally in a watermill in the most beautiful mm-hmm. surroundings,
mm-hmm.
lake, river, gorgeous gardens. And we all kind of live quite close in the little hamlet.
Mm-hmm.
And Philip, the writer, on the Saturday afternoon before the matinee, was calling us all up, hurling round, saying, have any of you got spare seats? Have you got anybody coming to the matinee mm-hmm. that we can bump? Because Andrew Lloyd Webber wants to come and see it.
We're full. I see.
And I said, surely we can persuade him. He said, no, nobody will give up their seats because they all want to see it.
Mm-hmm.
And by the most extraordinary irony, Tim Rice
mm-hmm.
had bought out
mm.
almost the entire theatre to celebrate a friend's 50th birthday.
Oh.
So it would have been a Clash of the Titans. It would have been fab. Anyway, nobody... that we could not squeeze...
Mm.
Would you believe this? We could not squeeze Andrew Lloyd Webber into our matinee.
Oh!
I still look back on that and think, what would have happened? And he was looking for a show. He was looking for a show that he wanted to get on in London in 2 weeks' time. Wasn't messing about. And he took another show, small show, went it out. It didn't last very long, and I don't know that we would have done, but it was a fab, fab show. Mm. So that was a close brush with destiny. I felt it was important mm. for me to be able to create a piece of work of mm-hmm. my own. As I said, it was...
mm.
It's always difficult to earn a living. So if you can create something of your own, or mm-hmm. two of you perhaps, or three, whatever,
mm-hmm.
that you can travel around with, that you can sell easily, mm-hmm. you can keep yourself ticking over and still be creative.
Mm-hmm.
And I was driving along the Waterloo Road with a writer friend, Murray Watts, and he was looking at the old Vic, and he said, isn't it extraordinary mm-hmm. to think that the Old Vic, the National Theatre, Sadler's Wells, Opera in English,
mm-hmm.
and Birmingham Royal Ballet are all founded on the shoulders of an overweight, undereducated, religious spinster who believed that Shakespeare spoke to her.
Mm.
And I thought, what is he talking about? Mm. And he told me a bit about this great lady, Lillian Bayliss.
So?
And
yes, yes, yes.
I started researching her.
Yes.
And we worked, I found a director, John Dryden. We mm. worked on it, we researched it.
Mm-hmm.
And eventually we took it up to Edinburgh the following
mm.
year.
Mm-hmm.
And I was then and still deeply in love and besotted with Lillian Bayliss. And when I meet her in heaven, I fully expect her to give me notes and tell me off.
So let's hear your interpretation of
the lovely Lillian.
The lovely Lillian.
I created a solo show called Beauty and the Bounders, inspired by the work of Lillian Bayliss of the Old Vic. She was very eccentric and used to talk to the audience as though they were kind of family.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, here she is on the opening night of Henry V. Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the Old Vic. Why aren't there more of you? I am sick and tired of having to remind you, Bounders, week after week, that the Old Vic depends upon your support to survive. What is it I tell you every week? Come on, you lazy lot. What is it I tell you every week? Come on, you remember? That's right. You bring us the pennies, and we'll bring you the beauty. How can we bring you beauty if you don't bring us your pennies, eh? No. And that reminds me, why didn't more of you Bounders come and see our production of Macbeth last week? Hey? No, it isn't. It's not difficult. Even you'd have understood it, dear. Well, yeah, no, maybe not. No, well, never mind. No, look, I was talking to dear Sybil Thorndyke when we were going to do this, because she played the lady, and she said, you know, Miss Baylis, every woman wants her husband to do well. Well, think about it like that. You want your husband to do well, don't you? Well, Mrs. Macbeth only wanted her husband to do well. Now, do you understand? I'll tell you what, I'm sick and tired of critics as well. Critics. I can't abide them. Why should we give the Bounders free seats and then let them say scurrilous things about us? James Agate. Do you know what he said? He heard, ladies and gentlemen, that I had arranged to have somebody come in and help my boys and girls, the actors, with their pronunciation. What did he say? The Bounder, do you know what he said? He said, in his review, he said it there in black and white, I am glad to see Miss Baylis is making arrangements to have her actors have vowel movements every week. Isn't that a disgrace? What a disgrace. That's so rude. It's so rude. Oh, ladies and gentlemen, here we are, the first night of Henry V. Do you know how much that armour cost me? A great deal of money. So I expect you all to come along, bring your friends. I want to see lots of you. That's right. You know, I wouldn't mind, but that armour's only made of string. It's a disgrace.
Mummy, I'm drowning, Mummy, I'm drowning. I can't swim in the waves. I'm too big, Mummy.
Don't worry, darling. You're all right now. We've got you.
But, Mummy, something's happened to my face, Mummy. Mummy, why's my face got all pulled down, Mummy?
Nonsense, dear. There's nothing the matter.
Mummy, please, may we get the doctor. Please, Mummy, something's happening to my face. Mummy!
Don't be silly, darling. There's nothing the matter. We can't afford a doctor. You made me ugly, Mother. I hate you.
These boys and girls, you know, they think I'm made of money, these actors.
Do you know, one cheeky Bounder came here the other day. He asked me for a rise. I haven't got 500 pennies in my 500 rise.
Anyway, I said to him quite clearly, I said, I don't make the decisions about money, dear. God does.
Do you know what he said? Cheeky Bounder, he said.
Well, perhaps, Miss Baylis, you could ask God whether we can have a rise.
You just wait there, I said. So I went into my office in the Royal Box. I knelt down. I had a pray. I asked God's advice. And then I went back and gave him his answer.
Sorry, dear. God said no.
Brilliant. What was the second bit, actually? The mummy bit.
The sequence where she's... I probably should have used a line or two before. I'm tired. She dozes off.
I see.
And you hear waves crashing. This is when they were living in South Africa. And she drowned. She was a very good swimmer, but she drowns nearly. Huh? Hiked out of the water. and it leaves her with Bell's palsy.
I see. That's why you are doing your face as well, because while you are doing this, you are doing your face as well.
Can't help it. But it goes with the territory. And her mother refused to get a doctor. Uh-huh. And
Lillian's face was, yes,
set into
you're right.
Bell's palsy.
That was absolutely great. That was an incredible interpretation of Polly Marsh doing the Lillian Bailey's, what would you call it, interpretation of her life, the way you were speaking, as I've said.
You asked me about.
Yes, yes.
She was very tired at one point, and she goes off to sleep. This is in the production. She goes to sleep and has this dream. She goes back to when she was a very small child and nearly drowned, and that's what left her ugly.
That's
with Bell's palsy.
Yes,
she never forgave her mother for that.
We have a couple of minutes to finish our first program, your first program. It has been marvelous listening to you and hearing you interpreting those beautiful voices. A thought about theatre. What is theatre? What does theatre do to people? Do we need theatre? Well, I've asked too many questions at the same time. I know.
We can't do without it. We always need to be uplifted, educated, teased, tormented. We need to have something inside our brain that makes us work. And theatre is... I will go on forever, so I think we should start... I should think we should stop there and start again later, because I get so excited about it.
That was Polly Marsh, with the exuberant Polly Marsh, with a beautiful voice, beautiful interpretations. Polly, Platea and I... thank you very much for your first interview and this program. Thank you.
Thank you.
Konto Adinta Samau. Platea. Program Lila Anima Sponente Oledin for Teatro.
Litzkelmo Malino Farrugia.
Tecnici Carmeno Grec u Kenneth Mitzvig.